A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 116. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of Escape into Night. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
Escape into Night was a spooky six-part children's TV serial from ITV from 1972.
Absolutely. It's a show about bad dreams, and it's left a lasting impression on all those who saw it at the time, so much so that it was suggested to us by two of our listeners, Jill Arroway and Tony from the Facebook group.
Yes, absolutely. And this was an adaptation of a novel called Marianne Dreams by Catherine Storr, which came out in the 1950s. So the story continues on. Marianne escapes from her sickbed into this dream world that she seems to create with her sketchpad. It seems that each thing she draws on the sketchpad seems to be there and enter the dream that she has. And she meets this strange boy called Mark, who also seems to be sick in the real world, and he can't walk in the dream, and he can't walk in the real world as far as we know. And Marianne can't walk very much in the real world, but she seems to be fine in the dream. And she seems to have all of her memories and know what's going on, but all that Mark can remember is this dream world.
That's right, absolutely. It's a strange encounter, and it doesn't always go sort of like smoothly. They do quarrel in the dream house, and as a result, when she wakes up, Marianne's irritation with Mark leads her to draw some other features in her sketchbook around the house, something that seems or will seek to keep him imprisoned almost in the dream house. And as we mentioned in the last episode, some of the stuff she draws doesn't always have a very sort of nice outcome in the dream world, I think, Brian.
Yes, and of course she is only learning how all of this works as she goes. So she draws some things sort of in frustration and in anger before she really realizes that this is going to show up in the dream, and that the dream can be a dangerous place and may affect them in the real world as well. And we also sort of realize that there was an old pencil that Marianne found in this little box of things that belonged to her grandmother. When she draws things with her pencil, they show up in the dream this way. But when she is not using that particular pencil, they don't show up in the dream. So that sort of becomes part of it as well.
Yes, it's a bit strange, and it's the mechanics of that are never fully explained in the show, but it does seem to be just that one particular pencil, and when she draws things with another pencil, they don't show up in the dream, and she can rub certain things out and so on, but not things that she's drawn with her grandmother's pencil. So again, mystery in this show. And while this mystery is deepening and these various events are happening in the dream world, Marianne's illness seems to take a little turn for the worse, and so does Mark's. Things don't seem to be going very well for them in the real world, as things also seem to deteriorate in the dream.
Yes, it does seem like maybe they could be linked, and things are apparently getting much worse for Mark in the real world, and there could be some real danger there with his health. And it is sort of interesting, because in the real world, Mark and Marianne never meet. And Marianne is only hearing about this through her teacher, Miss Chesterfield.
That's right. It's Miss Chesterfield who tells her that Mark's getting, his illness is getting worse. And as we learn, as you know, as we've said, it seems to parallel things getting worse in Marianne's dreams. And, you know, as you said at the start of the show, they're quite bad dreams, I think, Brian, aren't they?
Yes. And the sort of strangeness of how things connect one to another sort of builds this spooky sort of thing.
And while we're on the subject of spooky children's shows, we've been picking up on little British Invaders connections as we've talked about this this show Escaping Tonight. And we should perhaps mention at this point that Catherine Storr, the novelist, she based the dream house on a house she saw that was within the stone circle at Avebury here in the UK. And of course, you might remember that Avebury was the real life inspiration for the village of Milbury in a show called Children of the Stones from 1977, which we did in British Invaders episodes 33 and 34.
Of course, the village surrounded by the Circle of Stones. It's a good fit there, isn't it?
It is absolutely a good fit, yes, for something that, you know, that happens to this dream house. And another little strange connection between all these British Invaders shows. I suppose it's just the science fiction and horror and fantasy genre connections over the years, I guess, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And the other sort of odd connection is that the novelist Catherine Storr had studied music very early on with Gustav Holst, the very well-known successful composer who wrote The Planets. And Mars, Bringer of War, one of the movements of The Planets, has been used more than once in British science fiction, most notably as the theme music for Quatermass back in the 1950s. And, of course, we use the same piece as the closing theme music for British Invaders. So there are lots of fun little connections.
And that piece of music has cropped up elsewhere on British science fiction television as well, I think, Brian.
Yes, it was in The Tomorrow People. It was also in Space 1999. It's a good piece that cross-connects to lots of things, for sure. Very well known.
A great piece of music.
Absolutely. Now, the original novel, Marianne Dreams, was published in 1958, as we mentioned before, and the television version was quite faithful to the book, although in some ways it was simplified. There were a few things in the book that were dropped. There were not that many that were really changed, although in the TV version, Marianne was able to get up and walk around a little bit, sort of from very early on, where in the book she was completely bedridden and wasn't allowed to get up at all for quite some time. And there were some things like that. The actual condition, the illness that you had both with Marianne and with Mark, those were slightly different in the book as well. The book also was very much sort of focused on the point of view. So it captured the character of this 12-year-old girl very, very well, and the sort of frustration she had with being bedridden and not able to get up and go anywhere, and sort of how she takes out her frustrations and these kinds of things. It had a very authentic feel to it, and it was very well done. And that can only be done so much on a dramatization. It's something that works especially well in a novel. But I think they did manage to maintain a lot of that in the TV version. And I think that was something where this was quite successful as an adaptation, is that they managed to bring so many of those elements in.
Okay, interesting. I mean, perhaps without giving it away, does the book tell us anything more about the significance of the grandmother's pencil and so on?
I don't think it did. No, I think the way the mystery of the dream and the pencil and so on, it was all pretty much the same in the television version and the book. It was pretty well unexplained.
Okay.
Which was something I rather enjoyed, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's less important than the actual features of the mystery and the atmosphere of it all, I suppose. Okay. So there's also been a film adaptation of this book much later on in 1988. Director Bernard Rose produced a film called Paper House, which, again, you know, took its inspiration from Catherine Storr's book. There, Marianne, or in fact, I think she's called Anna in the film, was played by Charlotte Burke. And we have a difference in the adaptation because we have the role of her father, which is much more important in the film. And so her father was played by Ben Cross, who probably at the time was best known for playing Harold Abrams in Chariots of Fire, but more recently we've seen him as Sarek in the J.J. Abrams 2009 Star Trek reboot. And they did change quite a bit, I think, for the film. So in particular, the nature of the threat outside the dream house, the mysterious happenings outside the house that are sort of threatening Mark and the character Anna in the film, is quite a bit different. And I think, you know, the fact that they have the father there and they have the father being a rather threatening figure, they decided to do something different with the sort of psychological elements of the story. something in particular that Catherine Storr herself was not terribly happy with. She wasn't very happy with this version of her book, and in particular the ending of the film, which I won't give away, but is different both from the book and the TV show. The ending of the film, I think, really upset Catherine Storr. She didn't like it at all. I've seen the film. I have to say it's fairly lightweight, 1980s sort of low-grade horror in a way, and certainly not as successful an adaptation as this TV show we're talking about, Brian.
Interesting. Bit of a different take on it in that case then.
Yes, I think they did take a very different approach to the adaptation and not entirely successful.
Right. But there have been other adaptations as well.
That's right. Yes, there's an opera, I believe, Brian. Catherine Storr herself wrote the libretto for an opera in 1999. And again, we sort of remember that she had musical training from no less a person than Holst. So I suppose it's not entirely inappropriate that she could write the libretto for an opera. Although, sadly, it was not performed until a few years after her death. She died in 2001, so she never saw it produced when it went on in 2004, I think, Brian.
Yes, that's right. The music for that was written by Andrew Lowe Watson. And there are actually some clips of that that I've listened to on his website. Those are quite interesting. It definitely is a modern style composition with sort of fairly traditional operatic vocals. But they did some interesting things with it musically. And I think the story of it fits to what they were trying to do as an opera reasonably well.
Okay, that's interesting. I mean, as you say, clips to be downloaded from the composer's website, and one of the few shows we've talked about here on British Invaders that's ended up as an opera.
Yes. Yes, I think Box of Delights also had an opera, but it doesn't happen very often.
Doesn't happen very often, no.
Even more recently, in 2007, there was a stage version of Marianne Dreams that was adapted by Moira Buffini for the Almeida Theatre. And it was a children's production, I believe they said in the information, for children 7 and up or something like that. And I don't know a great deal about exactly how that was done, but that production did go ahead in 2007.
Okay, fascinating. I mean, you know, an influential book, lots of adaptations. And if you know anything more, particularly about the opera or the theatre production, we'd love to hear about it on the Facebook group or send us an email.
Absolutely.
Come down and let me in. I can't hear you. Let me in.
You needn't shout. In fact, you'd better not. It isn't very safe around here.
Why?
Because of... What do you want?
I don't know.
That's a stupid thing, not knowing what you want.
Come down and let me in.
I can't.
But I've got to get in. Isn't there anybody else who can let me in?
No.
Do you live here all by yourself?
It's none of your business.
Well, stay alone then in your horrid house. I don't care.
I can't come down because there are no stairs. No stairs. No stairs. No stairs.
So, Brian, I think we have to start to consider why it is that this show, Escaping Tonight, is so well remembered for being spooky and disturbing. And it sort of brings us on to talking about what we liked about the production and what we didn't like quite so much. Is there anything you felt that you that really contributed to this reputation it has? What were the good things about it?
Well, the way the dream sequences were shot was very well done. That you had the sort of open space outside and the confined space inside with these two characters who didn't quite know what was going on or why they were there. And they would argue and bicker with each other, but also be very supportive to each other, and there were threats to them from outside the house and this sort of thing. And it was very much something where you had sort of creepy and uncertain threats and sort of strange visuals and strange sounds and things in this dream space. That was very well done.
It was indeed, yes. The dream stuff is fantastic. You know, it's, as you say, the outside images. And again, at the time, we got this strange, slightly ghosting to nighttime shoots in outside broadcasts, which we saw on Time Slip, and it happens again here in places. And then we got the interiors of the dream house. And you put that with this very disturbing sound design, these odd noises that happen in the dream world, plus the music itself, and it's all very, very dramatic and impressive. And really, you know, quite... quite shocking stuff in a way for a children's show, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. In the real world sequences, they hang a lot of this show on the character and the performance of Marianne, which is fairly bold choice to do something like that with a young actress like this. At first, I found that was a little weak, that it was so much of her, but as I watched it more, that sort of grew on me, because it was easy to sympathize with her frustration, and it sort of captured this idea of the child being frustrated with her situation.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, we've got the performances. We've got two child actors and then the three adults, and that's basically it for the cast. And they're sort of, I think they're perfectly good performances by the children. They're nothing particularly outstanding, but I didn't have any huge problems with them. And certainly the adults give very solid performances in their limited roles. It's very much about the children in a way, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And that can be a problem, that you can start getting into things where you have lots of weak performances being very central and having everything depend on them. But in this case, I think it worked reasonably well, because the performances, as you say, were okay.
Yeah. The music we've mentioned, we've got the music at the theme, we've got the outro, we've got the sound design during the actual episodes. I think it's all pretty good, Brian, isn't it?
Yes, music and sound design is good. What would you think maybe is a little weaker in this?
We mentioned the performances. I guess the only problem I had is that sometimes the real world sequences drag on a little bit, and I sort of wanted to get back to the dream world. Although I imagine if I'd been a child at the time watching it, I perhaps wouldn't have been quite so sure about getting back to the dream world, because some of it was quite disturbing.
Yes, absolutely. I do sort of wonder if this 6-episode serial might have been better suited to maybe 5 episodes. I'm not sure about going all the way to 4, but going to something a little bit shorter, because it was a little bit on the slow side at times, although generally I do enjoy that. It could have been compressed a little bit, but on the whole, I think it was quite well done.
Yeah, I think so too. Was there anything else that didn't work terribly well for you?
Not really. On the whole, this was really quite solid.
I suppose there is a special effect, and we're sort of dancing around what the nature of the threat outside the house is. It's quite a memorable one, I think. It's the one that people who watched it will certainly recall.
And that's one of the things that is very well enhanced with the sound design as well.
Absolutely, yes. In places it's very creepy, and in a couple of places it's more obviously a prop. But it's pretty well done, and as you say, enhanced by the terrible sort of sounds that we hear, the really sort of nightmarish sounds.
They also made some of the things that were drawn by Marianne in the dream world look very much like they were drawn. So there was a point where she scribbles over the windows to give them bars, and it looks like a large version of a pencil scribble over the windows, and that was done quite effectively, I thought.
Yeah, the work that's gone into, designing and portraying the dream world is really very impressive. Absolutely fantastic stuff and quite scary.
Yes, it was very clever. So we should talk about the availability. This show was originally broadcast in color, but color copies no longer exist. The only thing that we have were the black and white telerecordings that were made for overseas sales. So what we have been looking at is the black and white version of a color broadcast.
And as we say, a black and white version sort of enhances the spooky aspect of the show, really. It's even more scary in black and white, I think.
Yeah, maybe it is. It's hard to say.
And it was one of those shows that was well remembered and talked about, and finally got released on DVD in 2009 by the network TV company who do a lot of these releases. And I guess we then got to see, whether or not it stood up to what people remembered from this show. Sadly, that DVD release, which is a very plain release, it's just the 6 episodes, no more. But that has now since been deleted. So if you bought it at the time, I think you did quite well, because it's now up at about £50 on Amazon Marketplace.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
And it's not available on Love Film or on Amazon.com or Amazon.ca. So it is a little bit hard to find. if you're stuck, it is actually available on YouTube at the moment, I believe.
Yes, I think so. You can watch it there. Whether the quality is quite up to the DVD, we don't know. But yes, it's up on YouTube because, as I say, the DVD release is now quite expensive to get hold of.
Yes.
Turning to the film, Paper House is available quite cheaply on DVD. Whether or not you want to spend your money on it, well, we'll perhaps talk about that in a moment. But that is readily available.
And turning to the opera, there is a CD of the opening performance of the opera, and that is available. If you go to the composer's website, you can send an email to request a copy of a CD of the opera. I have not done that. I haven't heard the full CD, but that could be interesting.
Okay. Again, if you've heard the opera, please do let us know.
Or if you've seen the opera when it was performed.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, the book Marianne Dreams by Catherine Storr, still in print. And again, that's readily available, I think, Brian.
Yes, absolutely.
So having talked about the availability and sort of our various good and bad points from this show, what are we going to say for our recommendations, Brian? Should our listeners seek it out and watch it?
Well, if you can find it, I would say yes. It's a good little series. If you like this sort of 1970s children's TV, if you like the spooky stories and the sort of child's point of view, it's a really neat little series. It's quite unusual in how it's set up and how it was produced, and it's very entertaining. It's a good little watch. So I would say, yes, it's recommended.
Okay, I'm going to give it a strong recommendation as well. I really think you should try and get hold of a copy and watch it. We've done a little run of children's TV recently on British Invaders. We've done The Changes and Chocky and now Escaping Tonight. And actually, I think I prefer Escaping Tonight. That's my favourite one and one of the most impressive things I've seen recently. And I think it stands up to the reputation. I think it is as creepy and spooky as people who watched it at the time remember it. So I'm going to say yes. Do try and seek out a copy or watch the YouTube version and let us know what you think.
That's a pretty good run of shows we've just covered. I liked all of them.
Yes, absolutely. Some good stuff.
So, in summary, Escape Into Night was an adaptation of Catherine Storr's Marianne Dreams. It was about a young girl, Marianne, who is injured and confined to her bedroom and mostly to her bed and struggling with this sense of confinement. And one of the things she's doing to relieve the frustration is drawing things on her sketchpad. And it turns out that when she dreams about the places she has been drawing. And a boy called Mark, who is also injured, is also going into this dream world. And it may be that these two real people are somehow meeting in this dream. And there are strange things that happen there that threaten both Marianne and Mark in this dream world. So it is very unusual and a very interesting, spooky little story.
Absolutely. A very fascinating little spooky show. Fantastic stuff. And thanks as ever to Jill and Tony for suggesting it to us. So jump back next time when we are sticking with ITV and the 1970s and we're on to one of the biggies of British science fiction television. We're going to be discussing Gerry Anderson's Space 1999. Lots of good stuff to talk about there, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. Live-action Gerry Anderson show from the 1970s. There'll definitely be fun stuff looking at that one. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much, and we look forward to having your company when we talk about Space 1999. And until then, this is Eamon in England, also signing off.